Game four of the NBA Finals is going to go down in the history books as one of the greatest games, certainly in Warriors history, arguably in the rankings, in the top five or 10 or whatever you want to call it, of NBA Finals games. It was historic. It's going to go in the annals of the books, and Kylan Mills was there to see it. So she's going to share some incredible stories, and we're going to obviously preview game five because this series is not over. That's the really wild part about all this. Despite everything the Warriors accomplished in game four, they still got to win two more. So we're going to break that down and then some. This is Locked On Warriors.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, it's where the game starts. You can follow Kron 4 sports anchor Kylan Mills on Twitter at Kylan Mills. You can follow me, Cyrus Otzes, on Twitter at Dog Surf Roadshow. Kylan, I did a post-game immediate reactionary show with Hall of Famer Rick Barry, San Jose Mercury News analyst and reporter Janelle Moore. But we've had a couple days now to kind of process and reflect on what was just an incredible game for Dub Nation. I feel like 50 years from now, we'll be thinking back to this game and hopefully smiling, provided this series ends the way we all hope it does. But Kylan, what was your first reaction and what was your first takeaway and just your general takeaway from that? Again, in my opinion, was a historic game four victory for the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah, historic for sure. Cyrus, thanks for having me back. Always good to chat with you. There are no words for what Steph Curry did in game four of the NBA Finals. My instant reaction was just jaw on the ground watching what he did, especially in that fourth quarter. The numbers he's been putting up throughout this series are incredibly impressive. But to go the way he did, putting up 43 points, 10 rebounds too, he was getting it done on the boards. He's been putting up great numbers as far as both field goals and three-pointers. Just the way that he came out with a fire in his eyes in that game, and then again in the fourth quarter, just icing it, putting the Warriors on his back. It was just truly incredible. It was an all-time performance. Klay Thompson called it Steph Curry's greatest NBA Finals performance, which coming from his teammate, Klay Thompson, that's saying a lot. Curry has just been incredible throughout the finals. But to me, that just cemented, I don't even know. Like I said, it's hard to put into words just how incredible it was to watch it firsthand. You could see from the beginning of the game just how emotional he was and how invested Steph Curry was. First quarter, like, he got an and one, or I can't remember, because he got no fouls called against him. So that's another thing that stood out to me, is that he's been getting no calls in not just the NBA Finals, but in Boston. It was atrocious, if you ask me. He's getting straight up shoved and not getting any calls. But I could go on a completely separate tangent about that. But, you know, just even in the first quarter, a couple big shots and he's going up, motioning at the crowd. And like, that's not typical Steph Curry. You'll see that later in the game, maybe after a couple big buckets, but like, he came out with a very, very noticeable passion and fire lit under his butt for this game. I mean, my biggest takeaway is just what a performance by Steph Curry. Number two, though, I want to mention two players that I think were really, really key. They've been that way this entire playoffs run, but especially in game four, Kevon Looney and Andrew Wiggins really crashing the boards and being so physical and just both being enforcers for the Warriors. They don't win this game without those two. So I think that needs to be mentioned just because, you know, finals aren't just won and lost in the stars. It's the role players coming through and becoming stars themselves, or, you know, just really stepping up and, you know, going beyond what their typical expected roles are. I mean, 17 and 16 for Wiggs, incredible. And Kevon Looney, I remember when the first time he subbed in the game, I think he had five rebounds in 7 minutes in the first quarter. And like, I noticed right away that he was crashing even the balls he wasn't grabbing for boards. He was tipping to teammates. He was making it difficult for the Celtics. So hats off again to those two, because they were key to this Warriors victory.
Oh, absolutely. You started the show magnificently with those descriptions. You're absolutely right. Andrew Wiggins, again, to have a career high 16 rebounds, to go along with those 17 points. He was just a monster inside. Kevon Looney, as you mentioned, you know, there's been mixed reactions about Kerr's decision to start Otto Porter Jr. In Kevon Looney's place. And it's hard to blame him because there's this one stat that shows that the most effective lineup for the Golden State Warriors in this finals and overall playoffs has been a five unit that includes Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins, Draymond Green, and Otto Porter Jr. When those five are on the court, they have an insane 76% effective field goal percentage. In 45 minutes together, they have a 140 offensive rating. I mean, those five clearly dominate when they're out there. I did not personally support it just because, and I think Kerr's kind of realized this too, for every minute that Robert Williams III is out there, you have to match Kevon Looney with him. You have to. He's the one man that does man up with Robert Williams III. Like literally, you know, and Looney's hands are incredible. I feel like the moment his hands touch the ball, he's not losing possession of it. You know, and the moment Looney came into the game, I think with that starting five, the Warriors started off down 12-6. You saw Looney come into the game fairly fast, and then it turned around shortly after that. But again, Stephen Curry, I mean, this performance was the stuff of legends. It was just, I think it silenced a lot of his critics. I would be very surprised if on Monday morning, Skip Bayless, for example, who routinely criticizes him, and I think his hatred of Steph goes back to the fact that he hates any reference of LeBron James and Michael Jordan in the same sentence. And I think he has disdain for Stephen Curry for not defeating LeBron James in 2016 because it opened the door for all these LeBron fans to keep calling him the GOAT. I really think that's the reasoning behind it, or at least a huge part of it. But I don't think his critics like Skip Bayless, I don't think they're going to have any justification for continuing this line of reasoning that Steph isn't clutch, that Steph doesn't carry the team. Because Stephen Curry became one of only he became the fifth guard in NBA Finals history to score over 40 points and grab 10 or more rebounds in a single game, ever. That alone is incredible. He became the first player in the history of the NBA Finals to have 40 or more points, 10 or more rebounds, and 7 or more three-pointers made in an NBA Finals game. That's staggering. So everything you said is absolutely right. What do you think about game five?
Can I add something?
Yeah, jump in, please. Yeah, please.
Another thing I want to mention is that what Steph Curry was doing in game four wasn't at any fault of the Boston Celtics. Like, they were playing really hard defense on him. They did not let up for 1 second. He was tightly marked. He was double teamed. And that also is what made his performance so impressive to me. All Steph Curry needs is the tiniest bit of space to hit shots, yep. And he proved that in game four. I saw a stat that Curry is shooting 54% on tightly contested field goals and 61% on tightly contested threes while attempting the most tightly contested shots of any player in the NBA Finals.
Incredible.
To me, that's an incredible stat because, you know, the Boston defense is all over him. They were all over him, especially in the fourth quarter of that game, based on how hot he was for the entire first three quarters. And he still finds ways to score. And if he's not hitting the three just by creating one step of space, he had some mid-range shots. He's driving to the hoop and getting these crazy finishes like he always does. I mean, he's just unstoppable.
Yep, I totally agree. This was very much, I saw someone post something on Twitter. I forgot who it was, but I really love the metaphor. And they were comparing Stephen Curry to Kobe Bryant in the sense that Kobe's first three championships, he won those with Shaquille O'Neal. I don't want to take anything away from Kobe for those first three titles, but Shaq did win Finals MVP those first 3 years. And I don't think Kobe really inserted himself as an individual into these arguments for greatest ever, or at least being in the top 10 or being on a Mount Rushmore, whatever categories you want to label these things, until he won those two titles without Shaq. I mean, Pau Gasol was a great Robin, but it's night and day between Pau and Shaq. And Steph's performance, he carried this Warriors team. But other players obviously deserve a lot of accolades. We talked about these rebounding numbers. Andrew Wiggins had a monster game. Steph was incredibly the third leading rebounder on the team with 10. Yeah. But the Warriors' rebounding was incredible. I mean, they bounced back from that atrocious game three where they got killed on the glass. They beat the Celtics 55-42 on the glass. 16-11 on the offensive boards. And that's where Draymond Green, despite the fact that three of the four games in the series offensively, he's been borderline atrocious. He did at least redeem himself in the sense that he still grabbed those 9 rebounds. He did have 8 assists. He made that one clutch putback on a Looney miss, funny enough. And it was just a remarkable game four. I don't, you're right. There's no way to put it into words appropriately. There just isn't, because it was just, I don't know how you can. It was just a really mind blowing game. So, real quick here, I want to give some love for people who want to save money. There's one great way to do that, and that's Truebill. Kylan, have you downloaded that app yet or gone to the website? Have you tried Truebill?
No, not yet, but I definitely need to save money. So,
yeah, we all do.
Throw that information out there, Cyrus, because I'll have to hop on this as soon as we get done.
It's a phenomenal way to save money. When I finally used it, it turns out I saved over $1,000 annually, because what Truebill does is basically find all the things you subscribe to, all the things you're paying for that you're not even aware of. Like, I didn't realize I had 2 Netflix subscriptions that I was paying for. I didn't realize I had a bunch of Amazon monthly like subscriptions that I just kept having stuff ordered to me that I just did not want time and time and again. There were 3 or 4 different bills that I just really did not realize I was paying for until I tried Truebill. They're a new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Like I said, I saved, I think, $1,100 approximately. And because companies make these subscriptions that are hard to cancel, Truebill makes it incredibly easy. You just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in one tap. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now, Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. It could save you thousands a year.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. We are free and available wherever you get podcasts. The ultimate NBA mock draft starts June 16th, and with over 50 insiders, nothing equals the ultimate NBA mock draft. The Locked On NBA Big Board draft experts plus the Odyssey insiders are going to be part of it. First pick is June 16th, so search Ultimate NBA Mock Draft and follow now so you don't miss a pick. You can follow Kylan Mills on Twitter at Kylan Mills, Cron 4 Sports anchor. She was on the scene in Boston covering Game 4. So let's talk about Game 5, because clearly, I mean, as big of a game as Game 4 was, now they have to play another one. And Game 5, I mean, all these people were throwing these stats about Game 3 and the winner of that game, like 82% or 83% of the time goes on winning the series. And I was telling people after that game, just blow that stat away. That is worthless. It means nothing to the Golden State Warriors. Game 5 has a very different meaning, because if the Warriors lose Game 5, I do think they're in a whole world of trouble. I don't think they're going to lose that game, though. What is your initial thoughts? What is your initial prognosis? Anything you're looking for as Game 5 comes to Chase Center tomorrow night?
The key to Game 5 for me, Cyrus, I don't think there's any tactical secret to this series at this point. The key to this game and every game throughout is going to be which team brings the most fire, which team brings the most force, and which team brings the most physicality. To me, throughout the first 4 games of this series, it's the team that has brought those things that has ended up winning the game. And the Celtics, yeah, they tried to serve it up to the Warriors, but the Warriors just hit back harder in Game 4. And it started with Steph Curry setting the tone early in the game. I mentioned the emotion we saw from him when he was firing up the crowd. He was really battling. And then, you know, some of the other role players, I mentioned Kevon Looney coming in the first quarter, and really he was mixing it up and crashing the glass. And he talked about, you know, needing to try to offset Robert Williams III, which is absolutely a factor. But to me, the Warriors came out playing much more intense and much more physical than they did in Game 3, and they end up winning Game 4. So for me, the biggest factor is just which team is going to bring the higher intensity. Today we heard from head coach Steve Kerr, and that's exactly what he said. He said the key to tomorrow's game, and for him, he specifically pointed out defensive intensity. When we start to, you know, let up a little bit on defense, that's when the Celtics punish us for that. And you also look at some mistakes, like a couple of costly fourth quarter turnovers that I noticed in game three. And cleaning up some mistakes like that, I think, as well. And getting into foul trouble early, another thing the Warriors just need to try to avoid. But the biggest overarching theme is bringing the intensity, bringing the physicality, because these are two very skilled basketball teams. Like I said, I just don't think tactically you can make some adjustments. I don't think there's any big secret or key at this point in that regard. I just think it's going to be which team wants it more. And to me, the Warriors clearly wanted it more, and specifically Steph Curry wanted it more in game four. What's going to happen in game five? Kerr talked about on defense, the Warriors having to be quicker closing out. We saw the three-pointers kill them earlier in the series. That's something they have to really continue to focus on. Closing out, being quicker on rotations. He said you've got to be a step ahead, not a step behind. Again, we're talking about a very skilled Celtics team. They will punish you. If you, like I said, if you get behind or you are lackadaisical at all on defense, mixing it up on boards, we just talked about rebounding. That's going to be one of the hugest factors to this series. The games that we've seen the Warriors get out rebounded and beat up a little bit on the glass, they lose. So I think that these are, you know, and just the hustle plays as well. In game three, I feel like, you know, again, I was there courtside. And one thing you notice is it felt like the Celtics were getting a lot of those hustle plays. They were on the right end of all of those hustle plays, diving on the floor, and again, just the team that wanted it more. So to me, those factors are going to be what determines who wins game five. And I agree with you that the Warriors lose game five. They're in a very tough position with a must-win game going back to TD Garden. And after seeing how hostile that environment was, how loud that arena was, it is a very, very, very difficult place to play. And if you're looking at a team that's wanting to close out the NBA Finals, you're in a, you know, must-win situation. I just think a game six down 3-2 heading to TD Garden would be extremely dangerous for the Warriors. They've got to go up and win tomorrow at home. And the Chase Center crowd, you guys got to bring it, man. Like, TD Garden was something else. I know we're going to get into some stories later, Si, but like, the noise level was just something I've never experienced in almost any sporting event. It was so loud. I don't know if it's just, I was talking to some other media members. We're like, is it the acoustics? Is it just the fans? But I mean, the fans brought it. Like, they brought it. There's no question about that. Kudos to Celtics fans. I know some people think they crossed the line. I tend to agree with some of the chanting, but like, hey, their passion is out there and it absolutely makes it more difficult for the opponents.
Oh, I love the East Coast sports energy. I always tell people I feel like I was an East Coast boy who grew up on the West Coast, at least in terms of sports and the passion that comes with that. They know their sports. They love their sports. I totally agree with you that some of the antics were incredibly classless, very immature. But what I saw from the Golden State Warriors, first of all, I don't think the Warriors are going to lose game five. I've been harping on this, whether I've been making guest appearances on other shows or talking on our show, Locked On Warriors. The Golden State Warriors, when it comes to Eastern Conference opponents, they have a hard time preparing for them. And what I mean by that is in the regular season, teams don't usually have the opportunity to fully prepare for upcoming opponents, especially Eastern Conference teams, simply because oftentimes there's only a day between games. Oftentimes it's in the middle of a road trip. So you're spending very few minutes studying film. You don't have the time to properly really analyze the opponent. And oftentimes you're playing that game and then you move on. So when these two teams met in the NBA Finals, they were not very familiar with each other. And in my opinion, just from my observation skills, it's taken four games for the Warriors to finally figure out this Celtics team. And here's what I think they figured out. Number one is Kevon Looney can neutralize Robert Williams III. They just have to match up with each other minute by minute. And if they do that, Kevon Looney has proven, and what a player he is. And what the Iron Man of this team, in a lot of ways, he's really absorbed some of that heart and soul that Draymond Green usually bears responsibility of. And he has just had a phenomenal series and a phenomenal postseason outside of round one. But Andrew Wiggins has been huge in the sense that his defense on Jaylen Brown is indispensable. Jaylen Brown, as crazy as it sounds, has been more difficult of a player to defend for the Warriors than Jason Tatum.
I agree. I said that to my husband today. I just said that exact thing.
he's physical. He's big. He's making a lot of clutch baskets. He's given the Warriors a lot of problems, but the Warriors have an antidote for him. Two of them, in fact. One of those is Andrew Wiggins. When Wiggins guards him, there is a level of effectiveness there, and he causes Jaylen Brown problems. So you need to have Wiggins out there at all times when Jaylen Brown is out there. And I think Kerr started to figure that out. Draymond Green, who has been clearly the most perplexing piece of the Golden State Warriors in this series so far, just because he's been disappointing. He has been a colossal disappointment. But he does, even though Jaylen Brown has been scoring off Draymond Green, none of those baskets are easy. It's taken a physical toll on Jaylen Brown when Draymond is guarding him. And here's what I am very confident in saying in game five. Draymond Green will have a game two performance in game five. I have the utmost confidence in that. I saw Draymond Green figuring things out, especially in that fourth quarter. I think he needed a bit of that humble pie in terms of being benched on some of those offensive possessions and being reminded that he is not a perfect player. He is, even though he's going to be a Hall of Famer someday, he is still just a human being. I don't know if like those Boston crowds actually got to him a little bit. I don't know if his ego got bruised a little bit just from all the attention. Again, he's just a human being, but we've seen this side of Draymond that we haven't seen before, which is a beaten Draymond Green. But he also started to figure things out. I think he's kind of realized that offensively, he can't attack Robert Williams III. Even Horford gives him some problems when he attacks. But at the same time, one thing Draymond has not been doing that he started doing at the end of game four is instead of loitering around the three-point line, instead of loitering at the top of the key and even beyond, when he's making passes, he's cutting now toward the basket. And that opened a lot of things up for Steph. That opened a lot of things up for Klay as well in the perimeter. Whereas before, for some reason, Draymond would make a pass and just stand around. And I don't know why he was doing that. I really believe, I am incredibly confident in saying this, that in game five, Draymond Green will have a performance similar to game two. I think with the Warriors championship pedigree, they smell blood in the water. There will not be a letdown performance. The Celtics have not lost two straight in this entire postseason. Game five will be the first time they lose two straight. I'm very confident in that. I'm just, based on following this team as much as I have and seeing them as much as I have, I saw enough in game four where I think they got over that hurdle, and I'm confident in them figuring this Celtics team, who is incredibly respectable as an opponent, but they figured them out. I think just the Warriors are just a better team, and I think they're going to win ultimately. We're going to break this down a lot more. I have to give some love first to Bet Online, a very longtime sponsor of this program. They're your number one source for all your betting stats and sports information. You can find all the latest sports developments, news, and odds, including, obviously, the NBA Finals, where the line, by the way, is out for Game 5. And just like with all the other games, it's pretty much a toss-up. The home teams are getting, on average, 3 points. Mm-hmm. And in Game 5, the Warriors are favored by 3.5. The money line is -170 for the Warriors, +150 for the Celtics. The over-under is 212. Kylan, anything stick out to you there that looks good for you?
If I was a betting woman, which I try not to be, Cyrus, but I would actually put my money on the Warriors because I agree with you. I think the Warriors win tomorrow. And, I mean, the 3.5 isn't too much where I don't feel comfortable putting my money on that for them to win by more than 3.5 points. I think the Warriors know what's on the line. And to me, the way they closed out, that momentum should carry from game four into game five. You mentioned the Celtics seeming a little bit demoralized. Yes. And I think that game four did, I think there was a hit to their confidence, which is a big factor. They came into this series, I think, riding the high from game seven against the Heat. They came in extremely confident and ready to take one in the Warriors' house, and that's exactly what they did. They came out and they hit hard. They didn't give up in that first game. And then after winning that game, you know, after winning game one the way they did by battling in the fourth quarter, that's a huge confidence boost for any team. You know, when you go down like that and you battle back and earn that comeback victory, game one on the road in the NBA Finals, like, I think they've been riding that high. And even though they lose game two, I think they're happy with the split, you know, at Chase Center heading back to their home floor, which is a very difficult environment for opponents. To me, what I saw in game four was a shot to the confidence level of the Boston Celtics. And I think that's also a big factor. Yes, they've not yet lost back-to-back games, but like the reactions and the way they lost in game four, I think has been different than previous games in the postseason. And I think the Warriors do have an upper hand going into this game because of some of that. So I like the Warriors, and I like putting your money on 3.5. I'd feel good about it.
I totally agree with you. I think they will cover that spread. I don't know about the over-under. That seems weird to me. It's just hard to pick. But regardless, you can go to betonline.net to bet on all the sports action, regardless of whether or not you're a basketball fan or you love the NHL Hockey Conference Finals, which are going on, Major League Baseball, MMA, UFC, boxing. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, it's where the game starts.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thank you for making Locked On Warriors your first listen every day. Make sure to go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board. Host Rafael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter is joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course the big boards. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. So is Kyla Mills on Twitter. You can follow her on Twitter at Kyla Mills. You can follow me, Cyrus Otzes, at Dog Surf Rojo. I just want to finish up my thought, Kylan, in terms of why I think the Warriors have figured this Celtics team out and why I think they're going to win game five. Another thing that Steve Kerr, and I don't know why he was stubborn in game three about this, but as weird as this sounds, and I do love the fact that the Celtics fan base is so loud when they win and they suddenly crawl and hide into their turtle shells when they lose, because you don't hear a peep from them when the Warriors win, but they were mocking me for throwing two names out there repeatedly that do have a huge impact in this series. One of those being Gary Payton II, who, even offensively, he does not put up huge numbers, but he always just has a knack for being at the right place or for doing the right thing. A case in point here, that beautiful behind-the-back pass to Stephen Curry when he could have put up a three himself, but instead he did the behind-the-back pass to Steph, set up the screen, and Steph hit that dagger three that was just part of his magnificent performance in game four. So Gary Payton II, I do think, deserves more than 10 minutes, but at least he's getting minutes. I would prefer he gets 20 to 25, but Steve Kerr is thankfully playing him now. And another player is Nemanja Bjelica, who, again, the stats do not justify him playing. But one stat does stick out, which is absolutely insane. And again, Bjelica had a marvelous performance in game four in just under 10 minutes of play. He held Jason Tatum to 0-for-5 shooting, and he forced Jason Tatum to 4 turnovers in this series. That is absolutely mind-blowing, but it's indicative of his value for this Golden State Warriors team. And just a few more stats, and I'm going to throw right back to you, Kyle, and thank you so much for letting me talk so much here. Another thing that really sticks out to me as well, and that game one kills me, because the Warriors should have won that game as well before they just gave everything up in that fourth quarter, and they just did not adjust accordingly. But the Warriors have shot only 25.9% on corner threes in these NBA finals. In the Western Conference playoffs, they shot 35.2% on corner threes. And during the regular season, it was 34.1. That number is going to go up. That number will eventually even itself out. Meanwhile, the Celtics' three-point shooting in this series overall is at 42.4%. These guys, for some reason, are not missing ever. I feel like they never miss threes. They're going to come back to earth, and it's going to happen, I think, sooner than later. And one last thing I want to throw out there as well in regard to the three-point shooting. The Warriors have shot, in terms of wide-open threes, they've only shot 33.3% so far. That number is going to go up in Game 5. In the regular season with wide-open threes, they shot 39%, and in the Western Conference playoffs, they shot 42.1% when they have open looks. That number will go up. They're going to make their shots in game five. Draymond Green will play a much better game in game five, and coupled with a fantastic bench, you might even see Iguodala play some important minutes. Otto Porter Jr. has been playing fantastic. We've talked about Kevon Looney. I am of the utmost confidence that the Warriors will win game five. And then I think with that momentum, there's a very strong likelihood they will close the series out in game six back in Boston. But even if they lose that game, they will not lose another home game in this series. That is my diatribe. That is my rant for why the Warriors will win game five. Anything you'd like to add to that, Kylan, on top of what I just said?
I think the Warriors win in game five. I'm not as confident as you, Cyrus, but I do think they have the upper hand. I see this going home the rest of the way to close out the series. I just think that playing in Boston, just incredibly tough environment. And the Celtics haven't lost back-to-back games in the playoffs. I am hard-pressed to picture them losing three straight games in the postseason, not to mention on their home court, you know, with their backs against the wall. So I wouldn't be surprised if this game, if the series goes to seven, but I think that the Warriors, like you said, I agree with you, the Warriors will close it out, and I think they do win. The Celtics, man, they have been lights out throughout this series. I mean, how about Derek White coming off the bench and just dropping dimes? I mean, incredible. He's been ridiculous. In game four, I think he was 3-for-5 from beyond the arc. I don't remember his exact numbers for all of the previous three games, but I don't know if you have his average from the entire series, but he's a player that stands out to me that's like, wow. You don't necessarily look at him right off the bat as being a huge problem, but he's been a problem, and he's contributed some massive minutes and been putting up, you know, double digits off the bench, 16 points in, I think it was in game four, and every single game in that game one win. Derek White was just on fire in that fourth quarter. So to me, he's one player that I'm like, is he going to come back down to earth? Is he going to, you know, be someone the Warriors have to still worry about? But the Celtics as a whole have been lights out in this series for sure. And I said after game one, I'm like, if they keep shooting like this from three, then they deserve to win. Like if Al Horford and some of these guys who are not usually three-point shooters continue shooting like this, they deserve to win the series.
Yep.
The Warriors have found a way to win despite the fact that they're still shooting well. Like the Celtics are still shooting well. Like they didn't shoot poorly. I think they were close to 40% from three in game four. But it's promising the Warriors are able to win regardless. And I think that they continue to sharpen up and really close out quicker and just fix some of the little things that we saw them lag off on in that fourth quarter of game one. And I think it's made a difference, and the numbers have come down a little bit. But, you know, kudos to the Celtics and to Boston, because they've been hitting shots when they need to. I mean, it's been kind of surprising and impressive, but they've been, and it, like, it's just funny to me that it's not necessarily Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. Tatum had a good game in game four. I think he hit 50 from three, but overall in the series, both him and Jaylen Brown have been hitting okay from deep, but it's like the role players to me, Cyrus, that have been like the big surprise.
Agreed. It's been shocking. Derek White, just put in perspective, in the four games in these NBA finals, in game one, he shot, let me get this right. In game one, he shot 62.5% from three. That was when he went 5-for-8, which was ridiculous. In game two, he shot 50% from three. He did not make a three in game three, but they still won despite that. And then in game four, he shot 60% from beyond the arc. To put it in perspective, Derek White on the regular season shot just 31.2% from three.
Mm-hmm.
And even in these playoffs overall, he's only shooting 33.3%, which is just gives you an idea of just how ridiculous these numbers are. And that's where at a certain point, you know, these things do average out. And the Celtics, I just do not see them sustaining this if it goes six or seven games. They're going to come back to earth. And I think game five is where that really starts. Ime Udoka, I've never heard him speak the way he did. I mean, that is one of the most confident head coaches in the NBA. He's a brash individual, and even he was kind of perplexed. I've not seen that individual at a loss for words, but he had a hard time explaining what happened after game four. Momentum is a beautiful thing in sports, and it's a real thing in sports. And I think the Warriors have all of it right now. I want to play the soundbite real quick this was from Klay Thompson, which just kind of highlights Stephen Curry's just incredible performance. Because, I mean, Klay's a splash brother. They've been through all these wars together. And I thought this heartfelt attribution was just a beautiful thing from Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry's splash brother. Here he is.
Have you seen Steph play with or show that amount of emotion before? And what did you see from how he took over this game?
I think I have seen him show that much emotion, and the heart on that man is incredible. You know, the things he does, we kind of take for granted from time to time, but to go out there and put us on his back. And I mean, we got to help him out on Monday. So we got, but wow, just showed why he is shocking. He wasn't a first team All-NBA guy, but whatever.
I love that shot, by the way, too, at the media. I agree. It is shocking to me he was a first team All-NBA. And Klay Thompson,
I can't justify that.
It's crazy. It's the the disrespect is so real. I've never seen a player receive less superstar treatment from the officials than Stephen Curry. Here's my gripe with the officials ultimately, right? Is there are a lot of calls in these playoffs that are like, you shrug your shoulders. It could go either way. These are 50-50 calls. Mm-hmm. And I am of the belief, and I believe this confidently, and I say this with conviction, that when a call is a 50-50 call, you give the benefit of the doubt to the team that is a dynasty, to the player that is going to be one of the greatest of all time. And we've seen this type of treatment with Michael Jordan. We've seen it with LeBron James. We see it with Kevin Durant. And we don't see it with Stephen Curry, and we don't see it with these Golden State Warriors. It is mind-boggling to me. I don't understand why this level of disrespect continues, but it is what it is, you know. And the Warriors have to overcome not just their opponent on a nightly basis, but also oftentimes the officials. Kylan, you were at Game 4, and there was a lot of talk about people flipping off the team bus. There's obviously the chants at the arena. You were texting me some really crazy stories. Describe your experience for games 3 and 4 in Boston, of just the arena, the garden, the fans, all of it.
It was quite the experience. You mentioned it earlier in the program, like Boston fans. I feel like East Coast fans are like this a lot in general. They know what they're talking about. They're super passionate. And they don't hold anything back when it comes to cheering on their teams, right? Like they got a little bit of that, you know, New England attitude with them too. I mean, it was wild. So the first, I actually think that Friday night was a little bit wilder than Wednesday with it being a weekend night. But like you show up and there's just like green across the entire street. And they're like, isn't even like a huge bar and restaurant area, but they're just like some bars kind of like lined up around the street. And people are just everywhere. It was just like a mob scene of green. And I get out the car and I'm like, oh my goodness. Wow. And like these people, especially like Wednesday night, caught me off guard because like there were a lot of people who were very, very intoxicated. Like it was tip off was 9 p.m. So like I think there was like a little bit of extra time, you know, to kill. Maybe if you got work, you were going to the game. Like there were a lot of people who looked like they've been overserved. People who weren't still were just like kind of crazy energy. So I got my camera out and I was trying to shoot outside the entrance, like maybe a little less than an hour before tip off to like get some like fan video or whatever, for Cron 4. And like people were coming up, like getting in my face, yelling stuff in front of my camera, like cussing, touching me. I was like, nope, I'm done. I'm out. I was just like,
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes. People just have no concept of personal space. Like coming up, hey, you know, and I'm like, Nope, I'm out. And like, granted, this was in a massive crowd. And I'm trying to, you know, shoot amongst drunk fans. I mean, so like I said, there's always a risk. I tweeted this too. There's always a risk anywhere that you're going into a crowd of potentially, like I said, fans who've had some beverages. But this was just like a next level. And then also, so my husband, Charlie Walter, sports anchor at KPIX, went outside during the game. And I told you this story, Si, but I think it's worth mentioning just because it was
kind of. Yeah, please.
That he went outside during the game. It was technically 6 o'clock back on the West Coast. It was like just after 9. So the game had just tipped off. He went outside with his photographer to do a little live shot for a 6 o'clock newscast. A guy came up to him and a Celtics fan came up to him and was trying to fight him. It was like, hey, you want to go? Like, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Like, and like Charlie's like, I couldn't tell if he was like joking or not. And like, he was kind of like, no, man, like we're not trying to fight. And the guy kept getting in his face. So he like kind of like tried to move away or whatever, because they're about to go live.
Oh my God.
And he's live. Charlie's live. The guy kind of like follows them and is like lingering or whatever. And he's like, oh, you want to fight me? Whatever. And
that's awful.
Jumps on camera while Charlie's live on the air, throws a cigarette butt at him and then says, S my D San Francisco during Charlie's news report.
Oh my God.
This guy yells that into the camera. Like his Charlie's photographer, Alex Louie, was like, dude, I was actually like nervous. Like I've never had to hit someone. Like I thought I might have to like actually shove that guy out of our, like out of the way. Cause I was nervous. So I don't know. It was hostile to say the least for some of our crews that were out there. And that's where I do think you get a little bit of crossing the line when it comes to some of the cussing and some, you know, doing things like that. And I do want to say, like, that doesn't just happen, you know, at TD Garden or outside TD Garden. Like, news crews out covering games like this where fans have been drinking, like, it's always a risk and there's always like some idiot who's going to come up. But like, it definitely was ratcheted up like another notch in Boston. Like, it was definitely like another level of what I had seen before. And then inside the arena was pretty wild. First of all, like, it was the loudest sport. I tweeted on, especially game four, I tweeted during the game, this is the loudest basketball game I've ever been to. Like,
so louder than Chase Center. Like,
louder. Wow. Chase Center. We're all talking about it in the media, in the media section. Like, it was louder than Chase Center. We're like, wow, Chase Center fans need to bring it. And I, again, like, I don't know if the acoustics of TD are like a factor too, because like Chase Center is still kind of like trying to find its way being a new venue. And like, you know what I mean? Like, fans are still, I think it still doesn't quite have a full identity the way Oracle did, because it's in, you know, this is the first NBA Finals in Chase Center.
Right.
Where TD Garden, you know, has been a long established iconic venue, and the fans, you know, are passionate fans. But I will say, like, I was shocked in game three, the first time the FU Draymond Green chants like broke out. I was like, wow, like, that's pretty aggressive. Like, you don't, like, I will say, going to a lot of sporting events, like, you'll hear ref, you suck. Like, you'll hear some things, maybe like a BS in regards to like a call, but like, you don't often hear just like F-bombs dropped openly. And it wasn't just like one section of the crowd. Like, there were several points in time, both games, where the entire arena, so you have to imagine, like, it's all of Chase Center, every single person is yelling F-U Draymond Green.
You can hear it. You can hear it on TV. Yeah, no,
but like, it just, it like being there, it was just wild, because like, it wasn't just like one, or, you know, like I said, it wasn't just like a certain group of fans. Like, the entire arena is dropping the F-bomb, like, just screaming it. And it happened several, like, I lost count. There were more than 11 anti-Draymond Green chants. And like I said, most of them were F-U Draymond Green. Not all of them were, but I lost count. I was trying to like keep a tally during game three, but they were just relentless. And one thing that stood out to me just about this trip is how much people in Boston hate Draymond Green. They hate him. Cyrus.
Everyone hates Draymond. Everyone outside of the Bay Area hates him. Yeah, everyone.
I get that, but like, dude, people were just going to the extreme. The amount of anti-Draymond t-shirts I saw were like, I'm just saying, like, it's one thing to hate him, to tweet something about him, but like, where you're like going out of your way to have like shirts printed and like paying for that and like all this other stuff. So I was like talking to fans, oh yeah, we had this printed as soon as we found out, you know, that we were going to play the Warriors, you know, we did a rush t-shirt job to get this out here, you know. And it's just like, man, like, I knew people hated him, but like, this is just like another level. So like, Draymond sucks shirts were out there. Draymond is a B shirts were out there. FU Draymond shirts were out there being worn. So like, that was like kind of an eye opener for me. Cause like you said, you kind of realize that people around the NBA don't like him, but like, this was just like another level. There are people with Draymond big heads that had like middle fingers, and like, someone had like Draymond like face palming like this on a big head. So I'm just saying, like, people are going like so far. Also, another thing, my husband Charlie, again, works for KPIX, he was doing a piece about like why do fans hate Draymond Green, and it cracked me up. He was asking people, if you were like choking on the street on a chicken bone and Draymond was the only person there who could possibly help you and give you the Heimlich maneuver, would you ask him for help? And across the board, everyone you talked to said no. And there's one guy who's like, I feel good about where I'm at in my life. Like, I've accomplished a lot. And granted, you know, some of it's tongue in cheek, but still, like, I would die before I would ask Draymond Green for any kind of help or to even
what
save was it, my dude, life.
Sorry to interrupt you, but what was the prevalent answer that people gave for disliking Draymond? I mean, I've never truly understood a good reason for hating him. They call him dirty. He's never like injured someone, at least not to the point where they're at missing a game because of it. And you know, he's outspoken, but I've never heard him say anything super controversial. What are the reasons?
People don't like him for that reason. So number one, one of the main reasons, that he's a loudmouth. I heard that over and over again too from people that I talked to. Can't stand him. He gets under my skin. He's a loudmouth. You know, he's out there saying that Boston's going to win, you know, making this prediction before the series is over, disrespecting the Heat. Like, I remember that was brought up by one guy, like, whatever, I'm a Celtics fan, so it's fine. But like, he just does stuff like that all the time. And he seems cocky. That's what that one guy told me. He seems cocky. He's a loudmouth. Again, people are just like, he gets under my skin. When it comes to play, a lot of people said he sucks. Like, Draymond Green sucks. Like, as far, he's not good on the court and he has a big mouth. Like, that's like generally what it seemed like the perception was. which is interesting. And I know Draymond actually talks about this and addresses this with the media whenever, you know, like haters are brought up. And he's like, you know, to me, that's just people who don't know basketball if they think I suck. Because, you know, he's like, I may not score the most points on the team or even close. You know, I may not score a lot of baskets, but like, clearly they don't know the intricacies of the game. They can't see what I'm doing, you know, leading this offense when he brings up the ball as a forward,
right,
and, you know, makes some of these passes that he makes. And then, you know, obviously on the defensive end being, you know, his real strength, that, you know, it's just people that don't know the game that maybe don't recognize what he's doing. And, you know, the rebounding and all the other things that he brings to the Warriors. But so maybe it's just people that don't know ball. Maybe, you know, maybe it's just they see what they want to see. But for me, overwhelmingly, and Charlie heard the same thing, people like, he's not good. He sucks. He sucks. You know, whatever. He sucks and he's the loudest mouth. We can't stand him. So that was probably the most prevalent answer, I would say. And then it was brought up that he's dirty. I did hear the same thing. Some people say he's a dirty player. He's dirty. Look at what he did on, a lot of people were bringing up, I guess there's a viral video and I did see it, like, that was shared by Bleacher Report and some other outlets were like, I can't remember. I think it was a free throw where he like goes and he like catches someone around the neck, or he's trying to grab a board and he catches Jason Tatum around the
neck.
In
game four, yes.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. A couple people brought that up and they're like, you know, look at this.
Big
like,
deal.
How he plays. You know, but that was, you know, used as a see, he's, you know, a dirty player. He's not playing the right way. So those were some of the answers, wrong or right. It is kind of interesting though, because like I said, it was an eye opener for me just to see how much people actually hate him.
It's incredible. And none of those reasons to me are valid for the level of vitriol and hatred directed
right
toward him. Like, oh no, he talks loud. Like, oh no, he's cocky. Like that, those are reasons for hating him. Even that play against Jason Tatum, it's subjective in calling that dirty. I mean, he was aggressive. I don't think they even called the foul on that play. Again, he's never injured someone to the point. I know he's made contact with people's faces a couple times. Where eyes got injured or got reddened, but they never came out of the game because of that. And for people who rip on his stats, again, he is an anomaly, but he also does have, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I just looked this up a second ago, I think he has 31 career triple doubles, and the Warriors are 30-1 when he scores a triple double. They've only lost one time ever when he's had a triple double. He also has a triple double. He also had a triple-double once without reaching that mark from points, meaning he had a game once where he had 4 points, 10 steals, 10 assists, 12 rebounds, a game that he should have gotten a quadruple-double. And I'm never going to forget that Game 7 in the 2016 Finals where, you know, they lost. But in that game, Draymond had 32 points, 15 rebounds, and came one assist shy of hitting a triple-double in a Game 7 of the NBA Finals. I think ultimately it's just he's won so much, and it's just this is American culture in a lot of ways. Like a lot of people in American culture, and you know, I hate bringing race up on this show, but I think a part of it is race, because if he was a white man, I don't know if that same level of vitriol and anger would be directed toward him. I really don't. This is just my opinion on that. But it's also very sad that he elicits this level of reaction. He's a winner. He's a Hall of Famer. He's just very different. He's unique as a player in terms of his statistics. He's outspoken, but last I checked, that's not a crime in this country. And
right.
Yeah, I just don't understand it, man. He's a human being. He just, you know, he trash talks, you know, he grew up in Saginaw, Michigan. That's a lot of people in the basketball court. That's how they roll. And for some reason, he gets picked on like this. But I do not think whatever he's done in his career is worthy of an entire arena for two games dropping the F-bomb. You could hear it on national TV. Mike Breen alluded to it during the Game 4 during the Game 4 broadcast, that you could hear it. It was crazy, Kylan. I don't know if you agree with anything I just said right there, but it's wild. It's wild. Well, Game 5, we're recording this on June 12th. It's now 4:30 p.m. as we're wrapping things up. And I do want to quickly mention as well, Jordan Poole had a solid Game 4 as well. Even though defensively, he remains a huge liability for him.
Yeah.
Offensively, he showed up. Those 14 points were huge, especially what he did in that second quarter to give Stephen Curry some vitally needed minutes on the bench. So let's hope Jordan Poole comes back and plays the way he did in the two wins. Kevon Looney, Steve Kerr admitted he made a mistake limiting his minutes in game three. We're not going to see that again. Let's hope Gary Payton II gets significant minutes. Nemanja Bjelica has proven he's worthy of playing minutes in this series. Great things happen when he plays in this postseason. What are your thoughts for game five? We're wrapping the show up here. What is your prediction for what is easily the biggest game of the season for the Golden State Warriors?
No doubt. My prediction is Warriors win. I think it'll be a tightly contested contest. Tightly contested contest, isn't that great? tightly contested game. I think the Warriors are not going to let this one slip through their fingers. The championship pedigree, the momentum they have after that huge game four win, and I think it'll carry over into this game. I think the Warriors win. And then I think that game six in Boston is going to be a bit more of a toss up, just given that environment and a very, very talented team with their backs against the wall. But I think the Warriors win game five. To piggyback off of something you mentioned, I just like am cracking up about Nemanja Bjelica's like defense has been elite in the postseason. Like, I'm not even kidding. And it's funny just because he gets so much crap because yep. he is very slow. He's a big, slow body. Like, not, you know, considered an elite defender, but he was killing it against Luka yep. Doncic, and he's been incredibly effective in this series too. So, well, I don't know, his numbers maybe haven't been prolific. He's actually been really solid, and I think especially defensively he showed up, and he deserves some credit for that. I don't have any problem with him in the rotation, you know, thus far. We'll just have to see. I like Kerr going deeper into his bench. I think that's something that needs to continue. And to me, was an issue in game three. The Warriors have the depth. Use it. Run the Celtics ragged. I don't think they have, you know, they don't have the depth the Warriors have. So I like that. And I think the Warriors take it home. Game five.
I agree.
I'll be there. Let's do it.
I agree. I think the urgency, the hunger is there. I don't think it's going to go away again this series. And we've seen what happens when the Warriors play with the utmost urgency. They win, plain and simple. And I really also believe that the Chase Center crowd is going to show up. And in the same way that the TD Garden directed all that pure negative energy toward Draymond Green and the Warriors in games three and four, I think the Warriors are going to bring it back and boost Draymond Green. He's going to be carried by that home crowd. And I think they're going to let the Celtics know that we bring some noise here as well in San Francisco and the Bay Area. As amazing as the Celtics fans are, they got the passion. That organization has tremendous history of their own. But the Warriors are a storied franchise as well. And the same fans that are at Roracle are, for the most part, at Chase Center. They're incredibly knowledgeable. They love this team. Joe Lacob, hopefully, hand out those tequila shots outside the gates. The fans could use it. It's a Monday. Who cares? If you're a boss out there, give your employee a day off Tuesday if necessary so they can bring that energy Monday night at Chase Center. Make some noise, people. Kylan, this is always a pleasure when I do a show with you. And like I said, once the season's over, we'll figure out how the rotation's going to go as you're going to be a permanent member of the show. Thank you. I'm done, I think. Anything else? Did we miss anything? Did we forget? I want to throw one last thing real quick for another shot of love for Stephen Curry. He joins LeBron James and Kobe Bryant as the only players in the NBA in the last 15 years to lead both finals teams in scoring four times in the same series. Stephen Curry has had a magnificent NBA finals. Just talk about adding a whole other step, a whole other layer to his legacy. I mean, this finals has been simply remarkable, and there's still more to come. So do we cover everything? Are we good? I think we're good,
covered
right?
Everything. Tonight, I'm going to be back on the air at Cron 4, Cron 4 Soup Session. We're doing a 15-minute show every night during the week. Sunday nights, we've got a 30-minute show and Sports Night Live. So we're also getting busy. Join us if you want to get some Warriors content. We're out of practice today and talking to different analysts we get on our show. So the grind don't stop, Cyrus.
It doesn't. No, I mean, as soon as the finals are over, I got a big vacation coming. And fans, one more time, bring that noise. So I'm going to be hosting a show Monday, a post-game reactionary show like I've been doing throughout the NBA finals. Kevin Dan is going to join me on Tuesday. I'm going to see if Gary St. Jean will join me as well. Kylan, you're going to be joining me again this week. But this show will carry over into game five of the NBA Finals, and let's hope for more Golden State Warriors success, everyone. Kylan, thank you so much. Follow Kylan Mills on Twitter, @KylanMills, Cron 4 Sports anchor reporter, multimedia journalist, whatever your official title is there, you do it all. You're the jack of all trades. You're the Swiss Army knife of Cons for Sports. And you can follow me, Cyrus Otzels, on Twitter at DocSurfRoadshow, and this program on Twitter at LockOnDubs. Thank you, everyone. Later.